Bracken, former Navy SEAL, best-selling author, is set to take over right now. I'm Alex Jones, your host. In 1 hour, the War Room, Harrison Smith takes over. The latest news and developments, be sure and share that. It's an info war. But Matt, 35,000-foot view, 100,000-foot view. What's happening? Everything we predicted, Strait of Hormuz, Iran, the economy, Massey, in general, where are we right now, Matt, and what's coming up?
I'm going to talk about all that, but, you know, I was listening and the caller before last was talking about, is Trump blackmailed? You know, what explains this transformation? Since I'm one with you and you're in, you know, Austin, Texas, I've been rereading this lately. I have the paperback. This is called a Texan from the 1870-1879, 9 years among the Indians, by Herman Lehman, captured by Apaches, right? They knew, this book right here, they knew, the Comanches and Apaches, that if they captured, they did, before the word Stockholm Syndrome was ever a thing, they knew that if they captured boys, they could, even if they boys had seen their parents killed, they could completely bring them over and they'd become, in their mind, Comanches or Apaches. This happened over and over again. Another great book, published in Austin, Texas in 1889. This is like a reprint. Indian Depredations in Texas. So this is like a collection of all kind of essays and short books, because the people then thought nobody in the future is going to believe this. If we don't write this down, they'll never believe it. So this is 1889, stories of what was going on in Texas. And my point is, people used to be very tough. But they even knew then that if somebody was captured, their mind could be Stockholm Syndrome completely over.
So John Wayne made a movie about little girls being captured.
The Searchers. Yeah. Great movie. And that shows that Texas spirit that, you know, that they're not going to run us out, no matter if they got if the next settlers are going to plant on top of our bones, they're never going to run us out. And another great movie, maybe even better, that's not well known, is a Burt Lancaster movie called Ulzana's Raid. Also covers that. But I think that when people are, maybe Trump, it began as being blackmailed, or not necessarily even him being blackmailed, but he spoke about, you know, his friends Howard and other people would be ruined by this. The human mind rationalizes. You don't want to. You can't go through life saying.
No, he's becoming an Israeli. He said, "I'm going to be the next Israeli prime minister today."
So you instead of saying, "I'm blackmailed and I'm under duress," the human mind finds a way to say, "No, I'm not being blackmailed. I chose this." You know, these kids that were kidnapped primarily by Comanches and Apaches, most in Texas, in the 1870s, 1880s, until the reservation really came in. These kids would be like quote unquote rescued. They would escape back to the Comanches. They were so in their mind brainwashed. They would have to basically do that. What do they used to call that? The deprogramming,
yes.
Like for Moonies or other cult members.
It's the same thing with the left. You know, they're literally under Stockholm Syndrome.
Totally under Stockholm Syndrome, and to the point where white boys are scalping American white settlers along with Comanches and Apaches. They're in their mind. So if Trump began by being, you know, and it's not blackmail, like somebody comes in and says, if you don't do this, we're going to do this. It's much more subtle.
Oh, we're going to protect you, sir. Process. When they planted child porn on us, we suppose it was them. They go, we want to help you. Let's be friends now. And I knew right what it was.
Yeah. But over time, over a period of years, the human mind rationalizes, they're not making me do it. I'm actually the king of the Israelis. You know, I've mastered them. They didn't bring me to doing this. I'm bringing them to do this. Because the mind doesn't want to snap. It doesn't want to go crazy and say, I can't handle the cognitive dissonance. The mind wants to
adapt.
You've
hit on something key here, Matt Bracken. Explain this when we come back. You've got the floor. Then the War Room in 55 minutes with Harrison Smith. Stay with us and share the feeds. You're the Paul Revere's.
To hell. For the last 30 years, one man has stood against the psychological operations launched by the mainstream media and the deep state. This man knew that the war would not be fought in the streets, but would be fought in the minds of freedom-loving humans everywhere. So stand with Alex Jones, this one man terminating wrecking ball of truth, as he launches his next great operation. AlexJonesLive.com has launched. Spread this message far and wide, because the tyrants want you fighting with each other instead of the true enemy of humanity. AlexJonesLive.com is the signal they can't stop.
You will never defeat humanity.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
And now, Matt Bracken, former Navy SEAL, best-selling author, breaks down the geopolitical crises that is deepening, the end of an age, the Great Reset. We are here.
Yeah, in the last part with Alex, I was talking about these. You think, how in the world do you connect Comanches and Apaches in the 1870s to what's going on today? And just listening the last hour this afternoon, the one caller was saying that a lot of his rich delivery clients were becoming preppers, filling up their garages with food and prepper supplies, not to flee, but to like just make their house an outpost. And that's definitely a good idea for anybody at any level. I always preach, do you know where your water comes from? It's great that you have 10 AR-15s, but if you're out of water a week after grid down, your guns aren't going to help much. It's old paradigm. What happens if the bullets outlast the beans? What happens if people are still shooting when there's no more food to buy or steal from anybody? Then what? So it's good. Everybody should be a prepper. But the times that are coming, I think that, are going to be something that nobody in the modern era has experienced. And the people that have experienced something very close to it are probably among the refugees that have come to this country, that have survived periods, literally drinking ditch water, watching family members killed, things like that. Mentally, they're going to be a lot tougher. And I got onto this theme with Alex because two callers ago in the last hour, a caller was saying how, we're trying to figure out, is Trump being blackmailed? What's the hold that they have on him? And by coincidence, I've been rereading this amazing book by Herman Lehman, L-E-H-M-A-N-N. He's part of Texas history. This is not something written, recently. I'm just on my Kindle. This is not some new thing, right? This guy is in Texas history. The Texas Rangers that wrote biographies, they met 20, 30 years after all this and discussed the same battles that they were in. A white boy with Apaches and then Comanches, captured by Apaches, literally sold to Comanches. But they knew, they understood, this was not something that they just came up with, that if starting with capturing from enemy tribes and then just capturing from the white settlers, if you captured a boy, say 9-10 years old, he has to be able to ride, he has to be able to at least survive. They were very harsh people. I'm not trying to just come down on the Comanches, Kiowas, Apaches, and so forth. Just saying what it was, they couldn't keep anybody like, say, under 10 years old, because they couldn't keep up. They couldn't endure the hardship of life on the run on horseback. And if you were too old, they didn't bother either, because, by the time you're 17 or 18, you're too set. But if they captured a, say, 10 to 15-year-old boy, Even if this boy saw his parents massacred, they could put him through such an ordeal, surviving on horseback, you know, fleeing Texas Rangers for days, you know, starvation conditions. After a period of weeks and months, Stockholm Syndrome would kick in, and eventually these boys became Comanches and Apaches. It wasn't a one-off. This happened to dozens of peoples, and girls too. In that John Wayne movie, The Searchers, you know, the girl who's kidnapped doesn't want to come back. You know, she's completely in with the Comanches. And you know, so what's the point of this? How does Trump go from being, you know, make America great again to saying I might go to Israel and become, you know, the next prime minister of Israel? Does he really believe this? I think he does. I don't think he's just making this up. That's how in his mind he's transformed himself. So you might start with being blackmailed and or second, you know, secondhand smoke blackmailed, like some of my key friends like Howard Lutnick. They're definitely going to be sacrificed if all these Epstein files come out. They're going to go down with the ship. So we're going to hold off on the Epstein files, go after Massey in Kentucky. But eventually, I think that Trump would not now, if you know, if you had him under a sodium pentothal, sodium barbitol, truth serum, I don't think he would say he was being blackmailed anymore. He just said that Netanyahu will do whatever I say. I think a transformation happens in the mind where somebody who might come to a point of view under duress,
and he's convinced himself, he gives the orders back.
That's right. And it's a rationalizing process. Because the mind, if it has to handle too much cognitive dissonance, is going to snap. So you wind up, you know, going from being blackmailed to thinking I have 5D chest and the Israelis, and now Netanyahu is actually my puppet, which we know is completely wrong. Because in the first week or so after February 28th, our sneak attack, Rubio and Trump both said, we did this because Israel said, we're going to attack
Trump
no matter what.
Trump said it again two times last week that he had to do it for Israel.
That's right. But now he's saying, Netanyahu will do whatever I say, and I may run. He's kind of joking, but it's like his mindset. He believes the polls that are favorable to him, and he dismisses the polls that are disfavorable to him as fake news. And he quoted or mentioned some poll that said, I have 99% favorability in Israel. Well, that's not necessarily a great thing because Israel has like zero favorability in the rest of the world. You know, this is like, you know, the Imperial Japanese saying that, you know, some warlord in China is on our side, or you know, the Nazis saying that you know, the Latvians are on our side in World War II. I mean, it's not exactly a ringing endorsement, you know, that when you see these pictures and drone videos of Gaza, and they look like Dresden, you know, it's a non-nuclear Hiroshima done 1 2,000-pound bomb at a time. And the 2,000-pound bombs all say made in America, and all the airplanes that dropped the 2,000-pound bombs were made in America and given to Israel under extremely favorable conditions, virtually gifts. So to the rest of the world now, there is no difference between America and Israel when it comes to this policy. You know, the world is aware that we gave those bombs to Israel. We're still flying those bombs to Israel. You know, there's that air fleet crossing the Atlantic, the C-17s, you know, going into Ben Gurion Airport. We even gave Israel, this is like a really red line, we gave them refuelers, which extends their range. And if you wanted to contain Israel, say, to within a defensive perimeter, you'd say, all right, we gave you F-16s, we gave you some F-35s, but they have a short range, and whatever you can do within that range, that's fine. But when you give them refuelers, tankers, you're now allowing them to lily pad, leapfrog, you know, far outside of Israel, so that they could even strike Iran itself on their own. And then we're in the position of saying, well, what can we do? Netanyahu is going to attack Iran, so we had to attack with them. But, you know, in the end, this is extremely self-defeating because, you know, I mean, going back to like Genghis Khan and probably the Babylonians, there's a reason why you didn't kill diplomats. You didn't kill ambassadors. You didn't kill negotiators. You don't even assassinate the enemy king because, you know, it may be a tactical victory this weekend. Yay, we killed Khamenei, the 90-year-old supreme leader. But after that, nobody's going to trust you to negotiate with you. You know, if you may decide later, well, we need to negotiate. Well, nobody's going to negotiate with you because you've proven that your word is no good and that you'll even go to the extent of doing assassination missile strikes during negotiations. It's like Friday in Oman. Hey, things are going pretty good. We'll see you Monday in Geneva. Yeah, see you Monday in Geneva. And then Saturday, boom. We're dropping Tomahawk missiles on a school in Minab, Iraq, or Iran, near the Persian Gulf. You know, we didn't mean to, and it was just an accident. But that's kind of hollow when it's part of a sneak attack. You've had months to plan every one of these strikes, and you just were saying, "Oh well, we're using a very old map." You know, my kids grew up part of their lives on military bases. My kids went to DOD schools in San Diego, in Guam, in Charleston. My kids went to schools on military bases. Can you imagine what we would think if during Pearl Harbor, not only did they hit ships, you know, in Pearl Harbor, but they hit a school and killed 160 grade school kids? I mean, we would still be talking about that. But our media is like, Matt, who cares? You know, we've been at war with them since 47 years, so if we want to do a sneak attack, it's all good. This is really stupid. I don't care if you're like, have the most brutal, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out mentality. It's self-defeating in the end. Sometimes you're going to have to finally sit down and negotiate. And nobody's going to negotiate with people that do assassination, quote-unquote decapitation, missile strikes during negotiations. And so Trump, at the beginning, he was obviously, at least it's obvious to me, he was convinced by Netanyahu and Mossad that the Iranians would fold in a couple of days, that another leader who was more sympathetic to the West would come to the top. Well, the Israelis bombed that guy's house. Ahmadinejad, I forget his name. But they bombed his house. So they knew this was never going to happen. This was completely a ruse to bring America into the war on the side of Israel. Because Israel's goal is not a regime change in Iran. Israel's goal is the destruction of Iran as a civilization, as a sovereign nation, as any threat to Israel, even hypothetically in the future, to turn it into another Libya, a Syria, a Lebanon, a Gaza. And they don't have the power to do it. So they need to get the big 500-pound dumb gorilla on their side to do it for them. And that's, unfortunately, the USA. And, you know, it's not like a zero-sum game where we can just continue this like, oh, it's a stalemate. We're blockading them. They're blockading the Strait of Hormuz. We're blockading Iran. This is not a zero-sum game because every week that's going on, the levels of fuel out in the world are going down. You know, there hasn't been a ship that's left the Persian Gulf. Well, very few, like less than 10%, maybe 5%, since February 28th. And this is like a lifeline to the world. So this is not like just Vietnam where we can do this for like 7 years, 10 years, 12 years. This is not Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan or Iraq where we can just bleed treasure into the sand until we're tired of it, because the whole world is going down on this one. And this is going to all be reflected back on America. You see the same morons that are basically saying, I don't care if it was a sneak attack, man. I don't care if it was worse than Pearl Harbor. Trump actually joked with the prime minister of Japan, the female prime minister, joked with her in the White House about Pearl Harbor, joked about Pearl Harbor. I grew up, Pearl Harbor was a horrible thing. It was, you know, don't blame us for Hiroshima because you started at Pearl Harbor. And I know it's much more complicated than that. And I know we put sanctions on them and we were starving them. I get it. Start of oil and metals. I get it. But when I grew up, my generation grew up, that began on December 7th, 1941 at Pearl Harbor. Because whatever else was politics, economics, but you attacked our base in Pearl Harbor. So 4 years later, we nuked Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Sucks to be you. You started it. We finished it. That was the whole way of understanding our war against Japan. You started it. We finished it. Now we have Americans bragging about or proud of doing something that to me is worse than Pearl Harbor. The Japanese at least cut off negotiations right before Pearl Harbor. It was formal and diplomatic. You know, they sent the right messages, which weren't read by our side until too late. But they at least attacked Pearl Harbor in aircraft that had come all the way across the Pacific, risking discovery. They attacked with aircraft marked on their wings. We were in negotiations Friday in Oman, see you Monday in Geneva, and then attack them on Saturday, which is you know, for them a school day, when the kids in the schools were killed, and we also basically followed the Israel Gaza protocol, which is if the artificial intelligence says there's an 80% chance that this guy will be home Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and you basically create an algorithm that says, what time is the best time to catch most of these Iranian leaders at home? Oh, 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. That means 60% for that guy, 90% for that guy, 80% for that guy. But if all the missiles hit at 10, we're going to get a lot of their leadership. And we'll get everybody else in the building too. The neighbors, the mother, the niece, we're going to get them all. And maybe the guy was out that morning. He's not even there. Oh, well, we were using AI. That's how we killed those kids. We didn't even have humans looking at each target. We let AI choose the target list and unleash the Tomahawks and the JASSM missiles from, you know, the long-range air-delivered cruise missiles for a time-on-target attack. We did that. It's nothing to be proud of. You know, this is not going to end well. There are scenarios where America doesn't win this. You know, the Germans and the Japanese in 1940, they didn't think they were going to lose. You know, they thought they were going to win. And they thought, what the hell? Our best shot is to start it ourselves with a sneak attack, with war of aggression in Poland in 1939 and at Pearl Harbor and the Philippines and Singapore, you know, in 41 and then early 42. They thought, we're going to win, and our best chance is if we start it. Now America, under Trump, thinks we're going to win, so the best way to optimize our victory is if we do the sneak attack. This does not always end well. You know, right now, the same morons that are proud of doing a sneak attack are saying, isn't it great? All the ships in the world are coming to Texas and Louisiana. It's like, yay, Trump, 5D chess. We're so smart. Now the world is coming to America to buy the fuel. Well, number one, all that does is inflate the prices for Americans because, you know, fuel is a fungible commodity. Gas, oil, it's a fungible commodity. So if empty tankers are coming here and there's a bidding war in Louisiana and Texas, we pay the price at the pump. And I don't think we've seen anything yet. But it's even worse than that. It's not just the inflation we're going to see for paying for energy. What do you think the rest of the world thinks of us that they have to send their ships to America now when we're the reason why they're not sending the ship to the Persian Gulf in like a free global market? Imagine an analogy where you have some corrupt town, you know, in the old South run by, you know, mafia, the sheriff, the mayor, you know, the richest guy in town. They're all named Johnson, or, you know, they're all the same clique. But there's one or two other gas stations in town. And so the mafia guy sends arsonists to the other two gas stations and blows them up. Now you've got to come to my gas station and I can charge way more. Do you think that this is going to make the world love America? Coming to America to load up their empty tankers when we're the reason why the price is going out of control? If you actually want a barrel of oil delivered today in Vietnam or Korea, it's way over $100 a gallon. That's the futures price. That's the paper price. And we're just seeing the very beginning of this. You know, this is like, for me, I compare it to a mid-ocean tsunami, you know, where you have, you know, the earthquake happens, you know, many hours before it hits, you know, in Thailand or, you know, Sri Lanka, many hours. And this cutoff of the fuel around the world, it's leading to the tank, but what they call the tank bottom, where you can't, as long as there's another tanker coming, your tank farms, fuel farms in Asia and Africa, you know, they might normally be hovering somewhere between 80% full, 40% full, but there's always another ship coming. That stopped. Now we're going from that 40%, 30% to the tank bottom. When you get to that last 10%, it's an unusable sludge. You can't even put that into the pipes. You know, it'll wreck your plumbing infrastructure for the pumps. So you've got to just say, that's it, no more gas. Australia, Vietnam, Thailand, around Africa, no more. No more fertilizer, no more natural gas. Well, Matt, they could come to America and buy it for a higher price. Oh, that's going to make them totally love America. So we not only start the war with a war of aggression, but we're now going to benefit by it because we blew up the other gas station in town. And that's going to make people totally love us and be on our side. What we're doing is driving the world away from us. Yes, they'll bring the super tanker here because they need the fuel, but they're going to be hating us every minute of it and figuring out a way to get off of the dollar and out of our clutches. And you know, this in the end is going to have a very negative effect for America. Just the way right now, Israelis around the world, they get off the airplane, you know, sports teams, things like that, they're boycotted, they're treated like crap. The rest of the world is looking at America, looking at what our bombs did in Gaza, what our bombs did in Iran, closing the Strait of Hormuz, which anybody with a 3-digit IQ knew would be closed if we attacked Iran this way. And now it's gone in for 80 days, 81 days. First, it was going to be 3 days, then 2 weeks, then 2 months. Now they're talking about July, maybe NATO will come. By then, the world is going to be going into an acute energy crisis, and next year, it'll be a food crisis. So we're going to talk about that again a little bit more on the other side of the break. But yeah, this is the tsunami. We're in the suckback phase where everybody's saying, it's not so bad. Look, the water's actually receding. What tsunami? Well, it's building up out there. And like a tsunami, you're not going to stop it. It's got its own force, and it's coming. Be on the other side.
When Barack Obama's birth certificate came out, and I went to the government website, I downloaded the birth certificate, I put it into Adobe Photoshop, I separated the layers, and I thought, this is crazy. They released a fake birth certificate. I didn't need somebody to tell me that. I didn't read somebody say that and just believe it on trust of them. I did it myself. I saw it with my own eyes. I did it with my own hands. And then I tell my friend, he's like, you know, that's racist, right? I'm like, what? No, I just did it. And they're like, you know, it's like a racist conspiracy theory, right? And you're like, what? What is going on? So if you've experienced that, the reason is some people do not have the chemical balance to handle things like that. You need a lot of testosterone to handle things like that. You need to have your mind not warped and distorted by the dopamine feedback loop that social media is designed to create in your brain to enforce you into the pre-established, preordained approved of mindset. So if you're here, you probably already are winning the chemical war over your own body, but that's why we sell the supplements that we do. Pretty much everybody takes them. Who doesn't take vitamins? Who doesn't supplement in some way or another? Who doesn't add a protein scoop when they get a smoothie at the store or take vitamin D or vitamin C or fish oil, you know, before bed or you know, when you wake up? Isn't a crazy thing. This isn't an out there woo-woo type of thing. Everybody takes supplements. Everybody I know takes supplements. And if you're not, you should be. And so all we do is get the best supplements on the market, white label them. And so you get them from us, you're probably getting a better price than at the store. And you're absolutely getting the best possible quality of all of these products. If you're here for the first time and don't know why you would support us, because you get the information for free, because the streams are free, because there's no obligation for you to support us, that's all part of the strategy. The fact is, we're able to keep this free because you go to thealexjonesstore.com. Put this information into action. You have to understand the attack on humanity itself and then fight back against it in two different ways. One, by advocating and trying to seize power politically to change things from the top down. But while that's going on, you got to be protecting yourself against this stuff. And we have a lot of supplements and vitamins and minerals and merchandise for you to do exactly that. Things like Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue, Methylene Red. These things are extremely powerful and combat exactly the type of poisons that we talk about on a continual basis. So I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not making claims here. I'm not saying it's going to, you know, cure any diseases or anything. But I'm saying that in the modern world, it's microplastics and, you know, atrazine and herbicides and growth hormones and fluoride that they put in the water on purpose because they want you dumb. You have to combat these things. You have to be protecting yourself and building up your internal shield so you can even handle the information that we're bringing to you. And that really is a thing. Testosterone, the higher your testosterone is, the more likely you are to go against the grain, to reject the herd mentality of the crowd, and instead pursue justice or pursue the truth, regardless of who says anything about it. And there's a chemical balance that has to be achieved there. But that's why there's such an attempt to lower your IQ, lower your testosterone, lower your masculinity, lower your self-sufficiency, lower your self-confidence. Because they want you a tired, weak, overwhelmed, overworked slave. That's what the people in power have designed this world to do to you. And you don't have to take it. You can fight back. You can protect yourself. You can reverse the effects of the damage that's done to your body, as it is to all of our bodies, by going to the Alex Jones store and getting a product.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Iran and not just the repercussions of the energy side of this, but long-term political fallout, geopolitical ramifications. But I want to speak a little bit more about this. What I was talking about, the Comanches and Apaches in Texas in the 1870s. And in this book, there's just like hundreds of, you know, 2, 3, 10-page accounts printed in newspapers or diaries. And probably the best book I've read on it is this Herman Lehman, 9 Years Among the Indians, 1870 to 1879. Basically his teenage years, growing to manhood. And the reason I want to talk about that is if we're coming into really hard times, the mental preparation is going to be so much more important than, you know, how much money do you have? How many cases of MREs have you stacked? That's important, believe me. But the mental side of this is unbelievably important because we've grown so soft. I think millions of people will die from despair because they just won't understand when the supermarkets are looted and the water stops coming out of the faucet. They won't know what to do. They literally won't be able to function. They'll have no idea how to survive. And a lot of the worst people will be the primary survivors because they've at least suffered some in their life and are more used to hardship, including refugees and others that have come to America from war zones or, you know, very poor third world countries. They'll actually do better than Americans that have never lived without AC. You know, that addiction specialists, I've read this and known this for years, and it's really very counterintuitive. They'll talk about heroin. It's hard to kick heroin or hard to kick the morphine related narcotics, but they say there's actually no pain in withdrawal. It's not that there's pain from withdrawal. You're so used to living in a pleasure zone. You're so used to living in a zone that without that, you can't stand it. You can't stand life in the normal, no pleasure buzz zone, that you're going crazy to get back into that zone. It's not that there's pain from withdrawal. People interpret DTs, going cold turkey, as painful. No, they're just trying to get back to the zone. Well, our civilization, we've been living in the zone. You know, we have a thermostat on the wall, and it's like, well, I want it at 76, and my wife wants it at 78, and we're always arguing, no, 81 is just too hot. Or 74, what, are you trying to freeze us to death and run up our electric bill? This was never even an issue for 99.9% of human history. The temperature was the temperature. Think about before the 20th century, there wasn't even an electric fan. If you wanted it colder, you better go up a mountain or wait for winter. That was it. Those were your choices. If you were rich, have a slave fan you. That's it. You know, it didn't matter if you were the king of England or the czar of Russia. There was no air conditioning. There was no refrigeration. The temperature was the temperature. In the winter, you built a fire. In the summer, you did the best you could. Imagine living in Texas or Arizona, 150 years ago. Nobody ever heard of electricity. Nobody ever dreamed about air conditioning or running water. That was just their baseline was so much more hardcore. He wrote this later, but Herman Lehman, he's kidnapped when he's 11 or 12, going up until age 19 with the Indians. These guys would be chased by Texas Rangers. They didn't fear the soldiers. The soldiers were a joke, but they feared the Texas Rangers. And what a book that is. Every American boy should read this book. And it's not just to say how terrible the Apaches and Comanches were or what great raiders and warriors they were, which they were, or how cruel they were, which they were. It's how much tougher people were. You know, these settlers in Texas, mostly German at the time, Fredericksburg, Carroll County, these guys had an expectation of a hard life. Then they're kidnapped by Indians and their life becomes 10 times harder. But they didn't go into shock and cry and go into the corner sucking their thumb or say, just kill me. They adapted. These guys would, unlike every cowboy movie you ever saw, where the cowboys are like making a campfire and sleeping around the campfire, the Comanches and Apaches on the run would never build a fire. They knew that the Texas Rangers were going to sleep in the saddle. They had to ride for days straight, sleeping in the saddle, tie themselves to the horse. You know, the person awake is guiding, leading the other horses. If they had to eat, if they killed one of their own mules, they would take its stomach contents and eat the stomach contents cold. They would any game that they ate, they were ready to eat cold on the spot. They couldn't take the time to make a fire. And if you made a fire, it would be a giveaway. If you had to make a fire, you'd dig a hole like 3 feet down and make a coal fire way down at night with wood that wouldn't make smoke. Because if you made smoke or any light, you'd be done. That would be it. Yeah, this is this war between the Texas Rangers and the Apaches and Comanches was that serious. These guys on the run, crossing deserts, if they found a spring that was dried up, they would eat mud. They'd eat mud because in the mud was some moisture. Yeah, they would eat bugs. They would eat anything that they could find. Insects, lizards, frogs, they would eat them. I'm not saying like, oh, wow, that's so gross. Why are you telling me this? I'm saying that they started with a much more tough baseline. No air conditioning, no central heat, right? You know, it's miles to visit anybody by horse. Kids had to learn to saddle horses and do all the horse work as like practically toddlers. And by the time you're 10 or 11, you better be doing work. Or you take it to the Indians and it's next level. I mean, there was absolutely none of this like, oh, you just want to be a squaw, or you can go with the girls. No. All of the Indian boys were tested, including the white captives. They had to fight each other. They had to do boxing matches, wrestling matches constantly, you know, with the rest of the tribe looking on and laughing. And if you weren't at least trying as hard as you could to fight, they had no use for you. You'd be done. They'd leave you. This is how they raised that warrior culture, that warrior ethos. You only were with your mother while you were on the breast and a toddler. After that, you were with the men. And if you can't handle hanging with the men, we have no use for you. Why am I saying all this? If we're going into these hard times, your mind is going to have to become hard very fast. If it's not, then you're going to go into a shock from suddenly no air conditioning. Oh my God, I'm in Phoenix. I'm in Texas. It's 105 outside and there's no power. What am I going to do? Well, what did your great-grandfather do? He never heard of air conditioning. He didn't surrender. But so much is going to happen so fast. He grew up in that era. He had no expectation. We have an expectation of running water, a supermarket full of food that we can afford. We have that expectation. They were tougher because they grew up without that expectation. They never thought of a fan, much less air conditioning. So when all of this happens, when there are famines in the world, and America will maybe not go into famine like some African country, but our social network is going to fracture and collapse because we have 350 million people, 100 million of them are fed by the government, some kind of EBT, some kind of food stamp program. When all of this stops, they're going to feel that the social contract has been broken. That rich guy with the garage that's all full of stored food, they're going to know about this. Even to the point of you have lights on. That means you have electricity. How do you have electricity? A generator, solar panels? You're going to have to hide things like this. And eventually, it will get down to the point of everybody around you that you encounter is looking like Auschwitz. You know, is looking like Bataan Death March. And you've still got some food on your face. You know, you're not looking like, you know, your bones aren't sticking out. How's that happening? You know, when people get to that level, and already, you know, the cities are exploding and people are looking for new places to loot, you're going to have to be very smart about this. Don't worry about refrigeration. Don't worry about air conditioning. They're not going to happen. You know, if the rest of the world in the period of an American social collapse, because we'll have the money, we'll have more food than many countries, but we'll probably go through a social fracture and collapse sooner than a lot of countries because of the baked in social problems that we have. There are countries that are much more poor than us that you would say, well, won't they go into collapse sooner? Maybe not, because psychologically they're already tougher. If you grow up in a South American country where electricity is only a 50-50 proposition anyway, you know, that where in your living memory you've had currency collapses, you've had hyperinflation. You know what happens when the supermarkets are empty, and you're prepared to deal with that psychologically. I don't think Americans are prepared to deal with it psychologically. So I think it's going to hit here a lot worse. And that's why, you know, and I don't mean to, you know, talk about how cruel the Comanches and Apaches were, and they were, but you know, When you read this, and every, I think I would give this to every young boy in America, 9 years among the Indians, say, look, he didn't quit. He was suddenly thrust into a situation where he was with other Indian boys his age, and they were tough, and he had to gain their respect. It was either that or just surrender and die, and he wasn't going to surrender and die. He became a Comanche. You know, he became an Apache, both, because he was sold from one to the other. Sometimes they formed up in common cause against the white settlers. But I think that as soft as we are, it's going to be a much bigger drop. It's going to be a really difficult psychological fracture if we get to the point where a lot of supermarkets have been looted, the people in the urban areas are going out to the suburbs foraging, not enough police to keep the peace, you know, then what happens? Anyway, enough on that. So when Trump was over in Beijing, Chairman Xi actually, you know, mentioned that America is a declining power. You know, the Thucydides trap came up, where a declining power, a declining empire, you know, is lashing out and trying to maintain its dominance. So I forget who said this. It might have been Dugin, the Russian, that the Russians and the Chinese see their situation now as managing the American decline from a unipolar world to a multipolar world without America lashing out and taking the whole world down with it in a massive, you know, Thucydides trap reaction. How do we... It's like having a belligerent drunk relative, you know, and you've got to walk him out of the bar. He's threatening everybody. He's got guns and knives all over the place, but he's your brother, and you're trying to walk him out to the truck, maybe get him to sleep it off. You don't want him to lash out, go nuts, and you all wind up in jail or dead in a, you know, huge brawl. So that's where Russia and China are today. How do we get America to go from believing that we like dominate the globe, whatever we want, we get. We got the aircraft carriers, we got the bombers, you know, we've got the 82nd Airborne and all of the, you know, and we can just do whatever we want, wherever we want. That's obviously coming to an end. And I think that even in the Pentagon, behind the scenes, that message is being conveyed to Trump and the cabinet. You'll see in the New York Times and Atlantic and other places where it seems like even the intelligence services are saying, we can't do another round of attacks on Iran. Number one, we're almost out of our standoff weapons. Why does that matter? Well, when Alex has mentioned, you know, we dropped 3 million tons of bombs on Vietnam, that's when we could just fly over Vietnam with B-52s in formation. They would literally fly from Guam to Thailand, dropping bombs over Vietnam, load up more bombs in Thailand, drop more bombs on Vietnam, and fly back to Guam, okay? So what's that got to do with anything? We could just fly over Vietnam dropping iron bombs. You'd see the, like, World War II just coming down, carpet bombing, one crater linked to the next crater, sideways, lengthwise. And what we were trying to do was cut off Vietnam from resupply from China. The Ho Chi Minh Trail ran parallel to North and South Vietnam through Laos and Cambodia. And we spent, you know, 8 years carpet bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and we never cut them off. So now we're trying to force Iran to submit because we're blockading their oil exports, as if that's going to make them submit. But Iran is 10 times bigger than South Vietnam, with six times its population. We had unlimited B-52 just vertically dropping iron bombs. They didn't surrender. Now, we can't even fly over Iran. If we do, we're taking a chance on being shot down. So we have to launch these JASSM missiles, it's like a cruise missile launched from a jet, because we don't want to fly right over Iran. So we're launching, you know, missiles that cost $2 or $3 million each. that we have a limited number of. So we're this isn't going to happen. We're not. I don't think we're going to go back to a big air attack. If it is, it's going to be some symbolic thing that Trump will wrap into a walkaway scenario. We destroyed their Navy. We destroyed their Air Force. So we won. But Iran's not going to let us off that easy because they don't want us just coming back in another 6 months or a year. So they're going to maintain control of the Strait Hormuz, They know that we can't physically retake it from them. If we could have physically retaken it from them, we would have done it already. What that Project Freedom was about was an attempt to escort ships out of the Persian Gulf. There are thousands of them stuck in there, including, I think, three more American merchant ships stuck in the Persian Gulf 81 days. And they were going to escort them through the southern Omani Channel, which some people had said we had cleared of mines with anti-mine drones, meaning we can't actually put a boat there to search for drones that way. So from some distance away, we're going to hypothetically clear that southern Omani Channel. So we sent two of our best destroyers, Burke-class destroyers, DDGs, guided missile destroyers, briefly into the Persian Gulf for 2 or 3 days. It's still very sketchy. There's no geolocations, but the best take is that two of the Burke classes went into the Persian Gulf where they have a very limited range because depending on their speed, they've only got between like 3 and 10 days of fuel. If they run out of fuel in the Persian Gulf, they're dead in the water. They could be captured, sunk, anything. So part of this Project Freedom was we'll send destroyers in and escort ships out. I think we got two American ships out. A French ship tried to follow and was hit. Our DDGs had to flee that Oman channel at the bottom, had to flee back out to sea. So we can't open the Persian Gulf. Doesn't matter if they have no Air Force or Navy. They have geography. They have you know, 1,000 miles of coastline to fire drones and missiles at our ships. So we're not just in a stalemate where we can do this forever, because meanwhile, the world economy is going straight downhill. And every week that goes by, the world reserve, that tank bottom, is getting closer and closer. And it's not solved by ships coming to Texas and Louisiana and filling up. That doesn't solve it. That drives our prices up, makes the rest of the world hate our guts, and it's still sucking that big tank, the global tank, is still sucking down because we're missing that 15 or 20 million barrels per day. It's taken out. One of the downfalls of this modern, interconnected, just-in-time economy, it's great when you consider that tankers are like little strands of beads crossing the ocean, going to every country. A week apart, there's a tanker heading to Holland, to Australia, to Taiwan, Japan, Korea. And, it may be every 3 days for this country, every week for that country. But their national tank, fuel tank, gas and oil, is somewhere in the 80 to 40%. Here comes the ship. It's back up to 70%. Those ships have sailed. They're done. So it's back to that tsunami situation. We don't feel it yet because we haven't hit tank bottom yet. And other countries will hit tank bottom before America. That's true. So we're going to see this around the world, like what we saw a glimpse of in Sri Lanka a couple years ago. They made some bad political decisions. They went tank bottom and had, social explosion all over Sri Lanka. Out of fuel. That means everything closes. Well, they're getting there in places like Vietnam and Korea and Japan. They're getting there. And it's not something like Trump is saying, don't worry, as soon as we straighten up the Strait of Hormuz situation, the oil prices will fall. That's delusional thinking. If it stopped tomorrow, if the tankers left the Gulf today, it's still going to be, depending on how far, 40, 45, 50 days before those tankers can get to the next to the countries to offload to save them from tank bottom. If we hit tank bottom, it's going to be global repercussions. It already will be, especially when you consider that there are countries that just aren't planting because they have no fertilizer. They have no experience with how do we go back to 19th century agriculture. Well, we didn't have 8 billion people in the 19th century. You know, the food meaning of the globe of the Green Revolution was we can get 3 or 4 times the harvest out of an acre, you know, with modern diesel-run combine harvesters, with modern seeds, with modern fertilizers, pesticides, the whole thing, fuel-running irrigation pumps, everything. We can now feed 8 billion people. You take away the diesel, no fuel, no water irrigation pumps, no diesel tractor harvesters, no fertilizer. So we may be seeing in 2027 the effect of what's happening in 2026, because we're still eating the 2025 harvest. The 2027 harvest should be going in now, but in a lot of the world, it's not going in. So no matter what happens, this is going to have global consequences, you know, cascading global consequences. Anyway, well, I'm glad to be able to talk to you, and I don't know the next time I'll see you, but hopefully pretty soon with better news, something maybe the Trump will do the walk away and not the bombs away. If we do the bombs away, we're just digging a deeper hole. And yeah, the morons that say, yeah, Matt, they'll have to come to Texas and Louisiana for even more of the last fuel in the world. Yeah, and they'll hate us. And they'll be out for revenge forever against us if countries go into famine. You know, usually famines were something that, you know, related to a drought or maybe a regional war. China and Japan suffered famines over and over again. This famine, this global famine, will have one very well-known cause, and it'll be February 28th, what Trump did then. So anyway, I'll talk to you later. And hopefully better news next time. You know, I've got, I'm plugging other guys' books today. This isn't even other guys' books. This is just history. And I think that it will work for you in order to just psychologically toughen you. And maybe, you know, your kids. Have your boys read these books. And, you know, I've got my own books too. You know, all of these I've been writing for years. But anyway, I'll talk to you next time. See you later.
Then at midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars. And InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to alexjoneslive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing. It hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back. Stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.